2020. This is a call to the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission Fish Committee. Would the commissioners on the line please introduce yourselves?
This is Dave Grayville.
Hello, David.
Don McIsaac, present.
Hello, Don.
Molly.
Was Bob Kehoe? Hi, Molly. Was Bob Kehoe intending to be on? Does anyone know?
My understanding was he was. He was not able to be on the call this morning, but he was intending to be on this one.
Okay. And then we have Joe Pinesco, our representative from the Attorney General's office, on here. Is that correct, Joe?
That is correct. I'll be keeping myself on mute most of the time.
Okay, that's fine. And
Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. Thank you for joining us. Any other commissioners? Who for staff for the agency is on here?
Mickey's here. I assumed it was going to be Amy.
No, I don't think for this call it was. Was it?
Good afternoon, Commissioner. This is Kelly Cunningham.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. Just you, Kelly? Anybody else?
This is Lori Peterson from Fish Program.
Hi, Lori.
I'm here as well. Hello.
Thank you.
Chair Carpenter.
Okay, we'll get started. I'm sorry. I stepped on somebody.
No worry, Chair Carpenter. This is Kurt Hughes, Fish Program.
Hi, Kurt. How are you?
I'm all right.
All right, folks. We have one item on today's Fish Committee agenda, guidance on policy C-3619. Mr. Cunningham, were you going to take the lead or one of the other staff?
Larry, I think I was going to start off with that.
Okay, that's fine. I didn't know who was going to do it. You're up, Don.
Okay, thanks. Just as a last check there, I heard somebody else get on. I wondered, is Bob Kehoe on yet? Okay. Well, what we have to look at for an agenda and for some materials has been posted on the website. And for the commissioners who haven't got that queued up, if you go to the commission website and go to the meeting agenda and scroll down to the Fish Committee meeting, you'll see a hot link that says Agenda and Materials. And when you get to that, there is an agenda and a sequence of materials all in one document that you can just scroll up and down as we move through it. And as far as the agenda goes here, let me also say I did talk a little bit with Kelly Cunningham the other day. Kelly, sorry I wasn't able to get back to you later in the afternoon, but I have, since the Kennewick meeting, talked quite a bit with Ron Warren about this. He's not going to be able to attend today, is my understanding, and he's all wrapped up in the North of Falcon business that's getting down into the late innings on that. So the agenda here, let me ask before I start if the Fish Committee members have got this up on their screen so that we can just kind of be sure and be all on the same page.
Yeah, Don, I'm working on that. I should have it done here in a moment. I'll let you know when I have it.
Okay, and Commissioner Graybill, do you have it up there?
Yes.
Okay. And some other people have joined. Let me ask again if Graybill is on here. Bob Kehoe, Commissioner Kehoe, are you on? And are there any other commissioners on other than Commissioner Linville and Baker?
This is Jim Anderson. I just joined.
Okay. And I'm jotting these down for what I presume might be a Fish Committee report to the full commission. In terms of the public, Mickey, I wondered if normally Larry goes around the room and everybody introduces themselves. If you have a listing of the public, maybe you could rattle those off. And Nikki, are you on mute? Okay, seems like maybe we've lost Nikki here. In terms of meeting notes, we normally put down how many other people are on the line, so maybe we can catch up with that later. Commissioner Carpenter, Chair Carpenter, have you caught up with that listing on the Internet yet?
I'm just getting it wound up. I should have it here momentarily. You can go ahead and start, though. I'm pretty familiar with it, I believe. So.
Yeah, okay. So for the agenda here that you see first up when you scroll down is a review of the material and the co-manager perspectives, a remaining process and schedule. The June 2018 motion language will be in the materials display. Areas of possible language revision is a separate document to work our way through. Tribal co-manager policy perspectives. We did have a meeting with the tribal policy folks last Friday, and I can report to the Fish Committee what their higher level perspectives were. And then the last thing there says discussion draft of policy guidance on language development. That is the chore for the full commission tomorrow. And the possibility of the Fish Committee making a recommendation to the commission would be based on what we will talk about when we get to that final document. So let me ask you to scroll down to the process and schedule. It's not one of these things where you can raise your hand and ask questions about, so I guess we'll just have to try to work our way through this, and anybody who has a question, try to bring it up. So the remaining process and schedule for possible language revisions to the policy starts on March 11th, where we have a placeholder there for the commission's response to the Puget Sound and Coastal Tribal Co-Manager's proposal that occurred over in Kennewick. It was April 3rd we did have a meeting with the co-manager and talk to them about their perspective on possible language revisions. At that time, we showed them what I'll refer to as a black font, red font document that had a listing of ideas of possible language changes and got their reactions to that and other things. April 9th and 10th, today and tomorrow, we have this Fish Committee to consider a recommendation to the full commission. Tomorrow there'll be a public testimony and comment period and a commission decision on guidance to the department staff on the development of possible adjustments to the policy language. The calendar next shows that at the Fish Committee meeting scheduled for Yakima, I probably would say currently scheduled for Yakima, it may end up being another Zoom webinar or conference call, when the Fish Committee would get something back from the staff on the language development guidance that comes out tomorrow at the full commission table. And at that time, the Fish Committee would discuss that and provide some feedback to the staff on further progress. Before we get to the committee meeting currently scheduled for Aberdeen, there's a commitment here to meet again with the co-managers as part of a consultation with them prior to every commission decision. And so it's got a date to be determined in the midsummer, but certainly before July 31st and August 1st period. And at that point in time, presuming that there is a new language draft there, that would be the topic of discussion with the tribal co-managers, and we'd hear their perspectives on the possible language revisions. And then on July 31st and August 1st, the Fish Committee would consider a recommendation to the full commission regarding a public review draft, and that would take into consideration whatever was heard from the tribal co-managers and the staff draft that everyone will see at the meeting. At that meeting, staff presentation.
I'm sorry, this is Bob Kehoe. I apologize. I thought we were starting at 2:30. Got too many meetings to keep track of these days, so sorry about that.
Welcome, Bob.
Late again. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you. Sorry. My apologies.
And, Bob, we're working through some materials that are on the website. Are you at a computer where you can take a look at what we're talking about?
Yeah, I am at my computer. And go ahead.
Yeah, if you look at the commission meeting link for this April meeting on August 9th, you'll see the workshop in the morning and then the Fish Committee meeting and a hot link there called Agenda and Materials.
Okay.
So we're working our way through that, and we're at we're on the schedule document, and we're at the point at our Aberdeen meeting where the commission decision would be release a draft revised policy document for public review and further consultation with co-managers. That's what would be on the agenda.
Okay, I'm getting there now.
Okay. Well, presuming that that does happen sometime during the review period of the rest of August, September, and part of October is a time when all the members of the public would have a chance to take a look at this. There'd be a policy level consultation with the tribal co-manager governments to hear their perspectives on that draft that the public is looking at. And then the final stage in the decision process is scheduled for October 23rd in Colville, where once again the Fish Committee would consider all the input that's taken to that point and consider a recommendation to the full commission. There'd be a staff presentation on final analysis that the Fish Committee would hear, obviously, as well. There'd be public testimony and comment, and then the commission would be challenged with making a final decision on any changes to the policy C-3619. So I know this schedule has been seen, I believe, by the Fish Committee members, but I'll pause here if there's any questions.
This is Dave. If there is a report on the April 2nd or 3rd meeting, I haven't seen it. I understand Jim Anderson was in attendance at this co-manager meeting, along with you, Don, and Larry, I believe. I'd like to hear just a verbal description of what the response was or the dialogue was at that meeting. I was not able to attend. I apologize for that.
Yeah. And so what we're looking for here is a verbal report on that meeting. And we don't have anything in writing on that. And maybe it might be good if we went through this black font, red font draft, which was shown to the tribal representatives, and then give their reactions to that. And I've got in front of me what I thought their three main points were, but maybe I'd ask Jim and Larry to think about that and see if they might want to add to that when we get to that. So it'll be a verbal report. Let me ask you to scroll down to page 4 on the materials handout, and this is the original motion from June of 2018, and I just bring this up because as we move toward the development of possible language changes, there were some things that were mentioned at that time. So in the middle of the first paragraph there, you see that the review should include examining performance results since the policy was adopted. We heard a little bit more about that this morning, and have a couple of reports that deal with that in some manner. Updating policy language and scientific elements, changing the language tone about the positive value of hatchery programs and providing alternatives for possible policy revisions, including at least a categorical designation for mitigation hatcheries, accommodation of southern resident killer whale prey type initiatives, and accommodating levels of hatchery-wild interactions to take into account the evolving science. So way back when, that was expected to kind of be up for discussion when policy language changes were on the table, and that's where we're at now, is we're at the stage of policy language business. So let me ask you to scroll down then to this black font, red font document. The black font is the current policy language. The red font is ideas for revised language. So since the meeting in Kennewick, there's been a lot of discussion about different ideas. I think all the members of the Fish Committee and some other commissioners have talked about ideas. We've gotten some ideas on the record from public comment. We've got quite a few ideas in our meeting with the co-managers, and this document or something very close to this document was shown to the co-managers in order to give them a perspective of what kind of ideas were being thought about. And so I'll run through these again, and then maybe we can talk about what the tribal co-manager reaction was to these. So you'll see at the top, policy title, the idea was to change the title and just make this a hatchery policy and not have it also be a hatchery and fishery reform policy. For purposes of simplification was the idea. The purpose statement, the idea here was to expand and include three purposes. The original language you see there only deals with the conservation of wild fish as a purpose of the hatchery program, or the purpose of the hatchery reform measures, which amounts to a full hatchery policy. So adding mitigating for permanently lost habitat populations, again, that came up in the original motion way back when, and also adding in sustainable fisheries for all groups as a purpose, sport, commercial, and tribal. The next paragraph in the original policy definition of intent, you'll see the idea here is to reword this. This is an idea for guidance to staff on developing additional revised language. The idea here is to reword this to reflect the change purpose statement. Under the general policy statement, the idea here is to reword the first paragraph and add a narrative about achieving treaty Indian fishing right obligations, broader ecological benefits, such as the killer whale matter or nutrients in streams, marine nutrients in streams, and other societal legal purposes. That idea came, a lot of that idea came regarding treaty Indian fishing right obligations from the two co-manager meetings in Linwood and Muckleshoot. Scrolling down then to page six, you'll see inserting a categorical definition to identify mitigation hatchery programs in the middle of conservation programs and purely harvest programs. The next idea here was to delete the two paragraphs that deal with marked selective fishing or fishery reform as the original policy had. Again, the objective of this was to simplify, the idea behind this was to simplify and just have a hatchery policy. The next idea here under the All-H strategy, this one talks about modifying language to clarify the relationship between mitigation for permanently lost habitat while continuing to work on restorable habitat. Also, strengthening the policy commitment to habitat protection and restoration is one that just came out of, more emphasis came out of the meeting that we just had on April 3rd, Commissioner Graybill that will give a verbal report on, but that now shows up here as an idea. And then lastly, to clarify, no policy change on marked selective fishery practice. There had been a concern, and by deleting all of the references to marked selective fishing, would that eliminate any policy of the agency and the commission about marked selective fishing? And the original intent was no, it was just to simplify. There are a couple of other policies that get to this marked selective fishing matter, so it would not leave vacant, so to speak, any policy direction on that. And there's also been marked selective fisheries even prior to 2009 when this policy was adopted. We can talk more about that later, but the idea here is for anyone who's concerned about that to put some language in to make it clear that this is not intending to change any of that direction.
Well, I appreciate that, Don. That was a concern when we originally reviewed this document. Because of those deletions, there is, as you say, mention of marked selective fisheries later on in the document, but I'm glad to see it emphasized there. Thank you.
Yeah, and I know Commissioner Carpenter, you had a concern. Commissioner Baker brought this up once in a brief conversation as well. And so we have a North of Falcon policy that talks a little bit about marked selective fishing. That's a five-year policy now. And there's a point above it that deals with statewide business. It's not. I would not call it a crystal clear policy on when marked selective fishing occurs and when it doesn't. But it's there. There's some language there. And the Grays Harbor policy, the Willapop Bay policy, also have language in there that focuses on. When hatchery fish are the most abundant, to focus on them, unless there's a situation where wild production is the target of the fishery, like, for example, in the fall in the Columbia River. But anyway, this adding this in would try to clarify that there's no intent here to change any of the current direction, even that was present in the department before 2009. This next matter here is a little, well, there's an existing language in the current policy, one sentence that deals with tribal obligations under U.S. v. Washington and U.S. v. Oregon. And the idea had been to strengthen this paragraph with stronger co-management narrative. That had been a concern consistently from the tribes at the Linwood and Muckleshoot meetings. This next red font is to add a separate paragraph stating that after adoption of this policy by the commission, the director is tasked to begin development of a joint policy on hatchery programs with tribal co-managers that has similar development and joint commitment provisions to the current joint policy on hatchery disease protocols. The Muckleshoot meeting, and since the Kennewick meeting, there had been the idea of putting this in as a policy guideline, and it had showed up on some previous iterations of this that it would be added as point number 13. But in this one, for our discussion here today, it's been elevated up to a paragraph in the general policy statement section of the document as opposed to number 13 on the list of policy guidelines. Moving to the policy guidelines, the three that have been suspended, you'll see them. The idea here is to strike those and replace these guidelines with a guideline calling for the development of a strong hatchery genetic management plan for every salmon program, every salmon hatchery program in the state, done in consultation with co-managers, where co-managers are involved. The idea here is to include wording requiring that the strong HGMPs be based on the best available and evolving science on hatchery-wild interactions, to describe a mitigation purpose if one exists, and to accommodate possible initiatives such as the southern resident killer whale. One important part of this idea is the...
Can I interject?
Yeah, go ahead.
I noticed that this only relates to salmon and steelhead are not part of this? And if so, why?
Well, technically, it's not meant to be that. And when we get to the next document, you'll see that the word salmon in the purpose statement is defined as salmon and steelhead, just to kind of get to the taxonomic lumping that's happened now, where steelhead are in the salmon family. So it's meant to be salmon and steelhead. And if people would like that to be more clearly written out, certainly that's an option for us. Going back just quickly to the HGMP matter, this would involve an HGMP for every hatchery program in the state, including those not listed under the ESA. So, for example, in the Willapa Bay area, we currently don't have an hatchery genetic management plan. It's not listed. None of the hatcheries on the coast are listed. Some are Chinook or not. We heard this morning and got refresher that Yakima River Spring Chinook are not listed, although we don't have a hatchery on that system. But the idea here was that taking care of the genetics at every one of the hatcheries and the effects of genetics at the hatchery on natural spawners in the area is good business. The idea is that it is a good thing to do. And so the idea here would be that it would be a requirement, if such a policy language changed, to kind of strengthen the statewide perspective on this. There could be some discussion about how the workload flows to take care of the ESA initiatives first, and whether or not the ones that in areas that aren't listed really do need as many sections as the ESA ones. But I just wanted to be clear that the idea here is that it's a good idea to have those. If you have a hatchery, what's your genetic management plan, and to have that in writing.
Hey, Don, this is Barbara. Can I ask a question here?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, like Merck Selective Fisheries, the thing that I'm concerned about is that we don't actually handcuff ourselves in some of these language changes. The idea of having an HGMP for every hatchery sounds great. It sounds like the more information we have, the better, and the better we can follow the genetics and all of that. But my question for the lawyers, my real question is whether this is aspirational or if this is going to be a requirement. And if we're going to require it, is there an implementation plan so we don't find ourselves exposing ourselves to liability for running a hatchery without one of these things? That's the nut of the question.
Well, we do have our legal counsel on here. Maybe we could turn to him for the legal question part of that. I have a reaction, but maybe we better let our legal counsel say first.
Sure. This is Joe. To the extent the agency has any policies, even if they are not in rule, if agency programs were not complying with those policies, that increases the litigation risk. If there is an adversary who is contesting some type of agency action, and they have evidence that the agency action is not following the agency's own internal policies, yes, obviously that creates more litigation risk. It would require fact-specific circumstances to really go much deeper into trying to quantify that risk and figure out how vulnerable an agency action would be under the particular circumstances. But bottom line, that's a risk, definitely a litigation risk.
If I might add, I think Barbara's question is very, very important. With some past events that we've experienced over recent years, we can't be too careful in that area. So I do think Joe and Don, we're going to have to dig into that a little bit and make sure that we don't have any tripwires.
So this is Bob Kehoe.
So
it might be a good thing to check with staff on the HGMP requirement for hatcheries in Puget Sound, given all the listed stocks in Puget Sound and species, steelhead, summer chum, Chinook, of course. So, you know, my understanding is, but I think we need to verify this with staff, is that wherever you have hatcheries that may have an impact on any listed wild stocks, an HGMP is required by the ESA. So I think, you know, just to, I don't want to say that that's the gospel truth, but that would be something that if there's staff on the line, or maybe we could have them research that and get back to us on that.
Chair Carpenter, this is Kelly Cunningham.
Oh, Kelly.
Yeah, go ahead, Kelly. Great comment, Bob. Go ahead,
yeah,
Kelly.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. Maybe just to back up a little bit and remind folks how the purpose of an HGMP and then how the agency utilizes them. So again, think of an HGMP as an application for ESA coverage for our hatchery programs. So to your point, Commissioner Kehoe, yes, wherever we have ESA and we have hatchery programs, we have submitted HGMPs and have entered into consultation with NOAA Fisheries to achieve that ESA coverage. We use those HGMPs internally for another purpose, and that is think of it as an operations plan. So the HGMP describes how we're going to manage brood stock and when we're going to take fish and at what size we're going to release them and the size of the program. So from my perspective, using Willapa as an example where we don't have ESA, the agency could certainly develop an HGMP that would guide us in our operations for those key functions, broodstock management, release goals, those types of things, purpose of the program. And if, and we're all crossing our fingers that we don't get there, if we got into a situation where we did have listings in Willapa Bay, we would be poised to be able to submit that HGMP as our official application. Not sure, Joe, if that helps with the legal risk or not, but again, we use those HGMPs for two purposes, to provide that ESA coverage and then to guide hatchery operation.
This is Dave, and the question for Kelly is, I know that we have submitted HGMPs for a lot of hatcheries, maybe 100 or more, and NOAA was behind on providing the approvals on those, and they stepped up their efforts. And so, in essence, my question is, how many HGMPs are in place right now, and then how many we would need to get approval on through the process that involves NOAA that would support this statement that we're reviewing right now?
Excellent question, Commissioner Grable. I don't have those numbers in front of me. You're right. NOAA Fisheries and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, for their role in assessing effects to listed bull trout, were way behind. They've made great strides since then. They've done a great job in catching up. We have, for those places where we don't have official ESA approval, our HGMPs have been, we've received feedback from NOAA Fisheries that our HGMPs are sufficient, and we're in that consultation phase. And also, please keep in mind that we experienced a number of changes to our hatchery programs with the new Southern Resident Killer Whale Prey Availability Production, which is requiring us to submit addendums to those HGMPs for NOAA Fisheries consideration. I'm happy to try to summarize that for the commission and provide that information, but I don't have the details in front of me right now. I apologize.
This is Jim Anderson. I've got a comment with regard to the HGMPs.
Go ahead, Jim.
The you know, my take of that is that it was more the latter, as what Kelly Cunningham was articulating, and that the intent would be to have order and communication associated with the practices that are going on at the facilities, and that of course we don't have listings in certain places like Willapa, so the HGMP through NIMS isn't necessarily where I was at in this discussion, but more in terms of a best practices document that could roll forward. We do have a timing, a phase-in, but the idea would be to have that in works so that we'd be operating in a kind of a organized way, a transparent way, and wherever the future goes, we would be poised to not be set back, and but rather be ready to meet any kind of challenge.
And Larry, I have a perspective on this as well.
Sure, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, so I think Commissioner Baker's brought up a really good point about should there be an implementation schedule. And some of our other policies, as you indicated, have had some problems with that. We had a Columbia River policy that called for a buyback program. And we had a Columbia River policy that talked some about alternative gear. And there were, as we went through the complete review, we found back that at the end of the policy, that had not all been implemented, maybe as hoped for at the beginning. So I think it is a good idea to that has been brought up here, and perhaps when we get to the next document, maybe we could add something in there for the staff to try to include some language about an implementation schedule, and have the staff think a little bit about the workload matter and what an implementation schedule that isn't going to create chaos might be. But the idea here is to add another burden that's not existing there just because of the conservation benefits of taking care of the genetics in the stream where there's a hatchery that can impact natural fish, and having a written plan so that it achieves the kind of things that Kelly Cunningham was talking about that we already have for ESA areas. But I'll make a note here, and when we get to the next document, maybe, which is oriented towards some sort of a motion that we could consider as a fish committee to the full commission, that I think it'd be a good idea to have that maybe be a committee add-on to what we're going to see next. Well, maybe I'll go back to the rest of this document then, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please, Don.
So the idea in the policy guidelines then would be to, with regard to striking the first three, to start with one that does state recognition of the various genetic risks of hatchery programs. I think that's an important conservation guideline that needs to be out there right front and center, to state what they are, to recognize what they are, and have that be an important policy consideration. And then add as a separate guideline stating the recognition of the ecological risks of hatchery programs in terms of, coho smolts preying on pink and chum juveniles, for example, that kind of thing. When we strike these other guidelines, it would not be the intent to dismiss the risks that are described in those three, but to actually recognize that there are these kind of risks, and then have a very strong directive and guideline number three to try to address those. And you'll see maybe a little bit more about that later. The listing of ideas here for number four was to strike the phrasing that is intended to use for harvest, and the idea behind that was to, again, keep things simple and just have this be a hatchery policy to the extent we can. Number five originally talked about necessary funding, and so the idea is to keep that and even elaborate it to make it stronger, as you'll see in a moment. Number six was something that was pretty important 10 years ago when this policy was adopted, but now there's enough water under the bridge that it's a little bit obsolete when you actually go back and look at the language. So the idea here was to delete that. Number seven had to do with annual reports. That's obviously a good idea. One of the ideas here is to have a new adaptive management section that was not in the prior policy, and in that, amongst other things, to put in some reporting schedule in there. Number eight had to do with promoting and implementing alternative gear fishing to selectively target on hatchery fish, and again, delete out of the simplicity rationale. Number nine had said seek funding from all potential sources to implement hatchery reform and selective fisheries. Deleting this, but consolidating it with number five up above to just get strong policy advocation for full funding of what the hatchery programs need in their entirety. Number 10 had to do with the definition of full implementation of a fishing measure, and again, delete out of the simplification rationale. Number 11 here is the matter of the wild salmonid management zones. That is to find some basins where there would be nothing but wild stocks. As we heard this morning, there's been some difficulty in implementing that. There are a few spots in the state where such has been done. But after 10 years, it's become difficult for some of the reasons alluded to this morning. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad idea. But what you'll see here as maybe a substitute idea is to prepare alternative language that provides the highest level of protection from negative genetic and ecological hatchery impacts to natural populations that have not been significantly genetically modified from the natal state or are now in a healthy condition with little or no same species or same run hatchery influence, and a process of identifying such populations. And so this idea gets to the fact that there are some strong natural populations that are on river basins that do have hatcheries on them, but by the fate of time, they've been able to stay strong. Maybe in some areas it's a fall Chinook run where the hatcheries release coho and spring Chinook, like the North Fork of the Lewis. Or maybe it's the Hanford Reach area where there's a very strong natural population with relatively little hatchery influence in terms of a proportion. Or maybe it's a Salduck River situation where there's a state hatchery and you've got an excellent watershed there up in the national park origin areas. So it's kind of, the idea here is kind of take the good things that you've got now in terms of wild fish, be sure and take care of those as your highest priority. Don't lose any more. That's the idea. And then the final policy guideline point here is calling for the expanded use of weirs where logistically feasible and agreed to by tribal co-managers. The idea comes from these examples on the Lower Columbia River, which is outside the area of tribal co-manager business, and maybe some ideas that are coming forth in the review of the Willapaw Bay policy. But a couple spots on the Columbia River where we've got very good weirs on the Kalama and the North Fork of the Tootle, for example, where we can do a lot more in terms of hatchery program options than if you don't have weirs. So there are some areas where tribal co-managers are opposed to putting in weirs. There's some other areas where it's logistically just not feasible, again, for maybe some of the reasons we heard this morning. But as a general idea, it would be to have a policy guideline calling for expanded use where it can be done. And then the last thing before we get to a tribal manager perspective report is to add an adaptive management section. There isn't one in the current policy and to have in it a description of the general need for adaptive changes, including scientific and management uncertainty, effects of climate change, et cetera. It would include a reporting schedule to the commission, and the co-managers are very interested in hearing these reports as well. So a deliberate attempt to say that they would be provided the reports. The third bullet is to describe managed monitoring and evaluation programs, research studies, assessment goals and objectives, the kinds of things that we heard about this morning that help you evaluate whether you're achieving your goals, what are your goals, and are you achieving them, and a good opportunity here in an adaptive management section to have a policy call that this get taken care of close to the get-go as we move forward if we're going to ask the same kind of questions 10 years from now. And then the final bullet there is to describe a process for adjustments to the policy as a result of new information or changes to critical factors. I know on the Columbia River policy, there was a question of whether adaptive management on a small scale was just something expected from the staff, or if it got larger, it required a plan amendment, so to speak, and it would be good to get that in writing as part of this adaptive management section. So maybe before we go to this verbal tribal perspective, that's the listing of ideas for areas where we could give direction to staff to please go develop some language.
Dad, this is Barbara.
Yes.
So on adaptive management, I tell you the truth, never exactly been clear on this. Does adaptive management allow us or the agency to go in opposition to a specific point on in the policy, or is it more on the edges of the points? And as an example of my question, I was criticized a couple of years ago when there was a proposal to allow a gillnet fishery in the Columbia when our policy said that wasn't going to happen. And that was posed as an adaptive management answer to possibly having enough fish to allow it. But it went against our policy, and so I voted against it. I'm actually, what I'm asking is the scope of adaptive management. Is that, do you have an answer to that?
Yes. Yeah, and that one example, well, first of all, when there's ambiguity like that, then you solve that by writing down what is the process. And so, you know, on that Columbia River example, there was a suite of criteria where you could deviate and have a summer Chinook gillnet fishery. But at least in some people's mind, it was ambiguous whether or not that was really an option or not. And so it's for that reason and maybe one other here that this is here. Since it's not clear and there isn't a firm definition somewhere that applies across all policies, to go ahead and write down what is intended and have the commission agree on what is intended in that realm with regard to tinkering on one side or a significant change on the other. And the other thing I would mention is in this hatchery policy, to start with, there was no adaptive management policy section at all. And we've been doing some adaptive management, obviously, for the past 10 years. And if people are expecting more adaptive management in the next 10 years or however long the policy would last, depending on the tribal co-manager part of it, to go ahead and write down what's expected. And so that's the intent, is to solve that ambiguity that you've described.
Okay, thank you. I think I'm getting clearer.
I just want to add to that a little bit. Understand how the adaptive management could work. But I feel obligated to say that we need to have as much clear, concise, precise, legally binding language in this as we can and leave as little room for wiggle as we possibly can, because it can be really, really a problem at times, and I would like to think we could, let's get it 99% right, and if we need an off-ramp for some particular situation, we could have it. But we got to be careful with that, in my view.
Larry, this is Bob. Can I weigh in on this a little bit?
Sure, Bob.
Yeah, so, good question, Barbara. Good discussion. Larry, I see your point, but I don't want to take away from Joe Finesco, but, I mean, the more rigid your policy becomes, the more it is like a rule. And my understanding is that these policies are just that, policies. They're not rules. The commission can and often does, based on certain circumstances, deviate from the policy. So, and I know some of you commissioners haven't been around the ball game as long as I have, and I know Commissioner Carpenter, I just wanted to bring that up. I mean, you can't, if you really want to have this rigid, what you do is you do a rule. You don't do a policy.
Well, Bob, I don't disagree with what you said, but there is a reason we call it a policy. And, there certainly has to be some latitude. I just wanted to make it clear that we have to be fairly precise in what we're trying to accomplish, and hope we don't have too many leaks in our tank here, you know?
Okay, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, that was good. I appreciate your comment.
There's a fine line, and then I think that gets back to your question, Barbara, about deviating from the policy or not complying to the policy in terms of timelines and so on and so forth. These are policies, aspirational goals, if you will, not rules. And then I, Larry, I have one other question or point to make with respect to the document, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead, please, Bob.
Don, when you and Dave and I, we looked at this document out, the days are kind of coming, kind of combining together, but we looked at this document a few days ago, and I think I made the point about, the phrasing wild fish, wild salmon, as opposed to natural spawners. Maybe you already touched on that before I got on the call, but I thought the understanding was that we were going to maybe adjust that, because that's the kind of the more common language and parlance these days is natural spawning fish as opposed to wild fish.
Bob, I agree with that. I think it's a more accurate description of the goals of the hatchery program. And there is often questions about, what is wild. So if you get back to the term of naturally spawning, I think is more accurate. I agree with that.
Yeah, I don't know if Don is on the line. Maybe he muted himself or got disconnected.
Yeah. So I'm still here. The internet tried to disconnect me, but anyway, I'm here. I do remember that discussion. I think we probably definitely have our terminology proper. I don't know if Kelly Cunningham now whether the word wild is inappropriate anymore or whether we might want to think about that further. But Kelly, do you know the right thing here is to strike the word wild and use natural spawning?
Yeah, maybe natural origin would be would cover the base, Don.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, for everyone on the call, we have 30 minutes left on this call, so we need to move along.
Just a quick question. Don, there are several references here. It says, add a guideline, for example. Is this being tasked to staff to develop those?
Yes, that's the idea here. This is a list of ideas. There's a document following this. I think we need to give our report on the tribal input, I should say, maybe perspectives. And then you'll see something that is a document that it would be good for the Fish Commission, for the Fish to consider making a recommendation to the full commission that this be the commission's guidance to staff to go develop language. So this other thing's been a listing of ideas so far, and there's a document that is going to look very similar, but it's going to have some more specificity in the purpose section, at least in the HGMPs. But then it would be instructions to staff to go back and come back with language later by the June Fish Committee meeting. And so in terms of moving it along, Mr. Chairman, I've written three things down for the tribal perspectives after we went through this list of ideas. The version was a little different, not too much different. And I have three things as their big points. They wanted to stress very strongly that there be a commitment to move forward with a joint co-manager policy on hatchery programs and hatchery operations after October. If this is adopted, if a revised policy is adopted by the commission, that we immediately begin to pursue a joint co-manager policy that would involve maybe a lot more different things. The second point is they wanted some more strength in the listing of ideas for habitat protection, for habitat that is restorable, so that no one confuses a hatchery with replacing natural habitat that could be restored, and so therefore why don't you just forget about the natural habitat restoration. And their third point was that they were glad this was moving forward. They were not objecting to this moving forward on this time schedule, and felt like there were a lot of good ideas here that would be an improvement over the current existing policy. So those are my three points, and I guess I turn to the chairman or Jim Anderson if there's anything else as a high-level point that came out of that meeting from your perspective that's appropriate for the Fish Committee and the commission.
Well, this is Jim Anderson. I think that highlighted the top elements. I think there was obviously a lot of interest and emotion and on the part of tribal representatives. They really did want this to be a ultimately a joint policy that we both stamp, if you will, that it really isn't just a state policy or a tribal policy, but it is one that we're together on, and they see that as the essence of co-management, where we're in the we got one set of fish, if you will, and we need manage them together. I think there was a sense of a real need to keep communicating and collaborating as this does move forward, even in this in this 6 month period, that that there's a need to continue to work on dialogue and make sure that we're staying together, if you will. I think the sense was is that that effort would be a bridge to the whole joint package, and that and that would be the end product. And finally, you know, I reiterate the habitat component to one recognition of the importance of fully functioning habitat and building that into this this policy.
Well, I'll be real brief. I don't have much to say after Commissioner McIsaac and Commissioner Anderson. They covered it very, very well. I thought it was a good opportunity to exchange views. I thought we covered a lot of things. I thought we heard, you know, from the tribal side, their pros and cons and things that they felt strongly that we need to work on. I think there is a fair amount of work to do yet, but I think we're moving along, and look forward to some additional discussions with them.
Okay. Any questions on the tribal perspectives? Well, then let me just launch into this last document. So this is intended to be considered here at the committee level as a recommendation to the full commission for language guidance to the staff. And you'll see in italics here a little bit that explains that and talks about the schedule of when we would come back and hear and see some different language. All of this is very repetitive to what we just went through. Let me just bring up three things that maybe four things that are different. Point number A, where the idea was to change the title. We heard from some tribal folks, how about anadromous salmon and steelhead policy? I'll put that out there as something for us to debate whether we would want to keep that in there or not. B, here is some very specific language about expanding the purpose to include mitigation and fishing. So it would say the purpose of this department, Fish and Wildlife Policy, is to guide hatchery programs to advance the conservation and recovery of wild salmon and steelhead, and from here on called salmon, by continuing to implement hatchery reform measures. So putting conservation first as what does show up in the mandate of the commission and in RCW 7704-12 or whatever that is. To perpetuate salmon as mitigation for lost abundance due to permanently blocked or lost habitat. Key words there are perpetuate, which does get back to some language in the commission and department mandate. It doesn't say that our mandate is to perpetuate just hatchery salmon. It doesn't say to perpetuate just naturally spawning salmon, but to perpetuate resources. And lost abundance due to permanently blocked habitat. And to provide sustainable economic and stability benefits to recreational, commercial, and tribal fisheries in Washington State. Again, the RCW with our mandate talks about providing for maintaining the economic well-being and stability of the fishing industry and enhance and improve recreational and commercial fishing. So there's some words in here that do go back to our main charge, and adding in the tribal fisheries is something that we should be recognizing as being all under the same umbrella, I think, is important. The two other matters include instructions to staff to go into some detail on the HGMPs. So if you scroll down to page 10 and look under E3, you'll see that we would ask the staff to come back with some language that gets a little more specific on the HGMPs about what's in there, and maybe provide an appendix that would be a prototype table of contents. It's in this E3 that I think we ought to add an E that gets to the point Commissioner Baker brought about to provide an implementation schedule recommendation. So it'd be a task to the staff to come back with an implementation schedule recommendation that would involve some of these places where we currently don't have HGMPs. And I guess the last one would be to go through this and wherever the word wild shows up to replace it with natural origin. And so that, I guess, Mr. Chairman, is kind of what I'm putting up here for the possibility of a motion. I don't know if we need a motion, but anyway, a recommendation from the committee to the full commission.
Are there any other questions or comments before I put a question out?
Okay, so this is Barbara. Not being on the committee, I'm feeling a little guilty, but may I ask one more question, please?
Sure, Barbara.
The addition of the word permanent in the mitigation part, I believe that, Don, you're talking there about dams, but I also believe that there's other places in the state where there's been permanent degradation of salmon habitat. Does this place a mitigation in terms of a financial obligation on those places? And maybe a separate question is there already mitigation being performed in one way or the other? Example, Duwamish, maybe Green River, maybe Puyallup?
Yeah, so let me say, first of all, the intent is yes, that anything that is absolutely lost is something that should have a mitigation debt to pay. And so whether or not the Duwamish Estuary or some of these other areas already have mitigation packages that have been described passed through history, I sure hope that that's the case, but I don't know. So let me just say that the intent is to do all of it, and maybe as the language goes forward and we get analysis of this, that's what we ought to ask and find out, whether or not this this goes to some areas where there never was mitigation called for. I know there are some examples on the Columbia River where mitigation was agreed to, and some of the folks that made that agreement have now gone by the wayside, or at least their commitment has gone by the wayside, and something other than mitigation is happening. But anyway, the intent would be, as a policy matter, that is something that gets to the heart of the mandate to perpetuate the natural resources in the state, and that if there's an area where a significant it would have to be have some level of significance, but if there have been salmon populations or large amounts of salmon habitat that have been permanently lost and will not come back, do we settle for just lesser salmon on in the future, or do we look for some mitigation to try to perpetuate back toward a higher level?
Okay, the question I have is for the members of the Fish Committee. Are there any members of the Fish Committee that would object to bringing this proposal forward to the full commission tomorrow as a recommendation? Hearing none, I am assuming that we don't need a motion, that we can bring this forward tomorrow as a recommendation to the full commission.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, I'll try to clean this up with regard to the word wild, and I think that might be the only one that, given what I've said, adding the schedule here for the HGMPs, and I'll try to get that out to folks so that Nikki can have it for the full commission to look at tomorrow when it's time for a decision.
Very good. Any other wrap-up business by any anyone else on the call, by any of the commissioners or Joe Finesco?
This is Joe. I can just jump in just briefly. There's been numerous references to this whole policy, and I already touched briefly on the litigation risk. And there is a case, Sudar versus Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife, published by the Court of Appeals in 2015, where there was a lawsuit against the Columbia River policy by the commission, arguing that that policy essentially constituted a rule and should have gone through rulemaking. And our office didn't successfully defend the commission's policy there, and it was upheld as a policy, not as a rule, because it was, the court looked at it and says, yeah, it's not imposing direct mandates on the fishers. Or it's not imposing direct mandates on fishing quotas, which is in fact done through separate rulemaking. So it's not, that case is not on all fours with this kind of situation where we're talking about a policy that is more directly inward on department actions and department management decisions, as opposed to end result of fishing quotas or shares amongst groups and seasons. But nonetheless, there is still litigation risk with that angle of it, and that prior Sudar case just further demonstrates that there are challenges there.
Thank you, Joe. Anything else from anyone on the call? Hearing none, it's now 12:12. I move to adjourn this call of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission Fish Committee. Have a safe evening. Talk to you tomorrow.